Hard to imagine a 123-100 loss to the Miami Heat, as disappointing as it might have been for Phoenix Suns fans, really making all that big of an impact in the long run. But with the Warriors coming on strong, getting Klay Thompson back, and proving to be a pretty incredible opponent for the Suns, we'll talk about how all of it breaks down in the Western Conference playoff race and what that loss can tell us about this team coming up just for you on Locked On Suns.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, credentialed media member covering the Suns the past five seasons, a contributor at Suns.com as well as Dime Magazine. Thank you, each and every one of you, for making Locked On Suns your first listen every single day, helping to grow this YouTube channel, finding us on Spotify or Apple or your favorite podcast app. We are growing. We are getting through the season as well, which is sort of crazy to say that we are basically at the halfway point. Trade deadline coming up, playoffs not too far after that. Things are cooking, and you are in the right place for it. To keep up with everything we do, follow at LockedOnPHXSuns on Twitter and at BrendanKleen14 if you'd like to follow me. Listen to tomorrow's show. We did finally cross the 750 subscriber threshold. We actually blew past it on YouTube. 800 is in the very near future, and the big kahuna of 1,000 is close as well. It'll help grow this show, monetize this show, continue to allow me to do this show for free for all of you. So thank you, and a happy Monday to all of you for all of that. But let's get to the main event here. Miami Heat beating the Phoenix Suns here in the Valley on Saturday night. A whooping, really. A pretty big spanking that the Suns suffered. Moving to 30-9, 123-100, like I said. A double-digit win. Not crazy when you just look at the Heat sort of zooming out, but when you consider the fact that the Heat had no Jimmy Butler in this game, had no Bam Adebayo in this game, who else am I missing? They basically were down to Kyle Lowry, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, PJ Tucker, and some, you know, bench guys. They're not so depleted like some of these other teams are. Like, you at least recognize the names. And I should have said Duncan Robinson. He obviously lit the Suns up in this game. But you got Kyle Guy and Omer Yurtseven and Max Strus. Like, they're people you may have heard of if you're a diehard NBA fan. But this was not the full Heat roster, and yet they were able to really lay it down on the Suns. From the perspective of this game, I think the obvious thing, and it's a continuation of something I think I said after the Celtics game last weekend on my Monday show, which was, hey, when you allow teams to shoot the crap out of the ball, you're going to lose. And the Suns know that that's a strength of theirs. But the reality in the modern NBA is you have to win that battle most nights. You have to win the three-point battle. Or if you're not going to do that, you have to win in other ways. And the Suns just didn't really do that either. They were also, despite the Heat being depleted, the Heat got 14 more rebounds than Phoenix, including 11 on the offensive glass. Devin Booker did not have his best night. The Suns turned the ball over 15 times. So if you're going to lose the three-point battle, you can't also shoot yourself in the foot in all of those other ways. But the reality, too, is the Suns just shouldn't lose the three-point battle all that often. Now, this was an admittedly a big fluke. They did shoot 14 of 34 themselves, the Suns did, from deep, and the Heat were just that much better. 22 of 44, getting up near, you know, the NBA record. If you're into the 20s in threes, like, that's an outlier type of performance. But, you know, I saw some people, and I'm totally on this side, we should have seen more adjustment, zone defense, or switching, or, you know, I don't know if there's much you can do when good shooters are making contested threes. I don't think this was necessarily a matter of the Suns not putting effort in to contest those shots. They did cut the lead down a little bit to a manageable chunk. I think it got as close as 12 at one point when the Heat did go cold from deep. But I think the obvious reality here is they just should have made the Heat uncomfortable. And you can't allow that to happen. But you also can't make the mistakes that you made on your own. And I think it's a combination of both of those that ended up in the loss. Aside from the result, which has importance in the grand scheme of the playoff picture, which we'll talk about in just a second, there's also some lineup stuff to continue to monitor here. So DeAndre Ayton, Jay Crowder, and JaVale McGee all returned to the lineup. So what we saw from a rotation standpoint, I don't say that that Cam necessarily eclipsed Jay Crowder in the lineup, any of that type of stuff, but worth mentioning there. And then Jalen Smith is the other big thing. The front court in general is the other thing to monitor here. So Jalen Smith got 13 minutes. I believe some of that was at the five because Ayton played only 32, JaVale played only 6 minutes. So if I'm remembering right, and the math obviously breaks out, Smith did play some at the five, but he played for the most part during the competitive portion of the game, including the first quarter, at the four. So I think that's going to be where he has a shot to make an impact. And it sucks. It's just the way it is. He was drafted onto a roster that already had a very, very good big man and happens to have to carve out a role for himself within that, despite that. So not ideal. His stints at the four did not look all that great. It was fairly disappointing. Bismack Biyombo did not play, but I think that's where we are. I think Biyombo will be more of an insurance policy if McGee or Ayton get hurt or in foul trouble, and Smith will get a chance here and there at the four, especially with Abdul Nader still out and some of these rotation pieces still getting locked into place, Landry Shamet still in the protocol and everything else. So that seems to be the thing, and hopefully Smith can continue to prove himself. I don't know. We've never really seen him look great as a four. His best flashes have always been when he can play center, and that's just not an option for him right now. So that's kind of where things sit with the rotation. But even though a loss is understandable, these types of losses happen even to great teams. They're reintegrating pieces off the protocol, the Suns are, and look, it's fine. I'm just not panicking about the loss, but when you have Klay Thompson coming back here on Sunday as I'm recording this and the Warriors continue to make this a pretty incredible chase overall, it's worth talking about what exactly is ahead for the Suns. So I want to kind of talk about Klay a little bit and his return and then parlay that into a more of a broad conversation about what's going to need to happen for the Suns to win the West or finish with the one seed in the Western Conference. So we'll do all of that in just 1 second. First, though, a quick word from Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever, and your key to sustaining your New Year's resolutions. Because, look, Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. You know that, but here's the deal. Built Bar makes it easy to keep that resolution because you want to eat a Built Bar. You don't want to eat the other guy's protein bars. You just don't. You make yourself. Maybe you bring one in your lunchbox over to work. You put one in your car. You tell yourself, hey, this is going to be breakfast today. This is going to be a snack today. This is going to be the pre-workout that I'm having today. And you end up dreading it because they're gross. But Built Bar fixes all of that. They are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. There's a flavor for everybody, whether you, like me, are a more of a dark chocolate guy or a gal who prefers coconut almond, which is my personal favorite, or you are somebody who likes maybe the more citrusy side or the fruit side. You got strawberry, orange, lemon cheesecake, something for everybody. All of them are delicious and all of them are packed with protein and low in calories and in sugar. So go to all your secret treat stashes, get some Built Bars, replace them there, and get going on your resolution. Have Built Bar be part of the goal, part of the team, part of the process of getting you where you want to be in 2022. Go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. The Golden State Warriors on Sunday night welcomed back Klay Thompson to the lineup, and it's just another chapter in what is shaping up to be a pretty remarkable chase for the Western Conference's one seed. And we haven't even mentioned the Jazz here. And they definitely deserve to at least be their name to be said. But the Suns did become, on Thursday night when they beat the Clippers, the first team to 30 wins. By the time you hear this, it's looking a lot like the Warriors will be the second team to get there. They are on the verge of a blowout over Cleveland here at home in Thompson's return. With all that said, though, it does seem like it's a two-team race, as long as everybody stays relatively healthy. The Suns and Warriors have already both overcome some significant health problems, and they've already proven they can do that, so I feel pretty comfortable saying that. But this Klay thing is not going to be easy to deal with when the Suns play the Warriors, and it's not going to be easy for anybody else to deal with. Now, I do still tend to think that, so Klay came back and his stat line not doing much else besides scoring, which, you know, your mileage varies on how much you buy into that, but I think that that actually can tell us something. But as a scorer and as sort of a piece of their offense, it looks, you know, it's a hand in glove fit. It is, it's his 11th season. He's been playing this system for most of his career, and you can tell, and he fits. Because of course he fits, because the system was built around him back, you know, when maybe before we all can remember, considering it's, you know, been a minute and some things have happened. But this is a guy who is going to be a killer as a scorer, I think. You know, that this return makes me feel pretty confident saying that he already sort of has his legs under him in a way where he's able to get his jump shot off in the quick way that we're used to, run off screens, attack closeouts, isolate. Those are, you saw all of it tonight. And so that's just going to be tough. I mean, a starting lineup of Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green, and Looney is, I mean, it's right there. It's right there among the best in the league if Klay can be that type of scorer, and their bench is full of guys who terrify you. They played 12 people tonight because, and Kuminga didn't even get on the floor. Kuminga and Damian Lee both didn't get on the floor, and those have both been guys who have been rotation members at different times over the past couple seasons. So that should show you how deep and dynamic this Warriors team is. You're probably thinking, if you've listened to me talk about this before, okay, Brendan, but you've been talking about how the Warriors are going to have an adjustment period on the Klay thing. And I think that I still stand behind that. I think it will be an adjustment, and I think tonight solidified that there probably will be one from the rotation and the way that's playing out, but also, I think defensively, you'd be silly to think that there's not going to be some adjustment period defensively for the Warriors, because remember, this is a Golden State team that came into the season absolutely, or came into this game and has done this season unthinkable stuff on defense, like genuinely, like, generational, historic levels of defense in terms of not only how good their defense has been keeping opponents from scoring, but also how far ahead of the rest of the NBA they are. Cleveland, who they're playing tonight, has actually been up there, as have the Suns, for most of the season, but there it's almost like a tier one and then the rest of the NBA. No one's even touching the Warriors. So when you think about it that way, you think about, you know, defense is generally one of the things most based on physicality, athleticism, and that type of thing, because, you know, offensively you can affect the game if you're a great passer or a great shooter or, you know, just smart player. You're going to be able to do a lot of damage on offense like Klay is already doing. But defensively, to be part of a scheme that requires a lot of movement that the Warriors do, it's a lot of helping and communication and flying around, and to contain the types of players that he's going to be expected to defend, that's going to take a while. And not only is it going to just take a while for Klay, understandably, after almost 100 days without playing basketball, but it's also going to take time, take minutes away from some of their already proven solid defenders. And so you're not going to have as much Gary Payton on the floor. He was starting at times for this team when Poole was out. He's playing 17 minutes tonight, and a lot of that has only come because it's been a blowout in this fourth quarter. You have, you know, Juan Toscano-Anderson, who's a pretty solid defensive player. You have Andre Iguodala, Otto Porter, both guys who as team defenders are still pretty good and can do some things in the right matchup on the ball as well. Like, you're going to see some juggling by Steve Kerr, and I think there might be a little bit of a lack, a little bit of slippage on the defensive end because Clay is going to take some time on that end, and maybe he'll never be what he was, and it's going to be a balancing act all year. That combined with what I still think will be a difficult series of decisions as the season goes on for Kerr to decide who he's going to play and when. You can't play, I mean, you're unlikely to play 12 guys in a playoff rotation, and you've seen that burn Steve Kerr before when he has tried. So I'm not backing away from the idea that there will be a little bit of growing pains for the Warriors, and maybe that results in a couple losses here and there that the Suns can take advantage of. But I do think tonight was a reminder that offensively, and just from an IQ standpoint and a sort of institutional knowledge standpoint, like, he's going to pick up right where he left off. And them giving him the luxury of a little bit longer just to get conditioned and get back used to playing will go a long way. That's sort of what I came away from tonight thinking about. But if those losses do happen, the Suns are going to need to be ready to pounce. They cannot lose games like they did against Miami too many more times, because this is shaping up to be a pretty legendary race for the one seed. So let's break the rest of that race down here in just 1 second. But if you are interested in getting a little bit of money in on who might go ahead and claim that top spot or represent the Western Conference in the NBA Finals, well, I have the place for you to go. Bet Online, who would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the NBA playoffs. We finish up the college football playoffs and the pro football playoffs. A lot of stuff. Busy time of year in sports heading into 2022. New year, new updated desktop and mobile app over at BetOnline. So download that app or head over to the website betonline.ag today. Make an account, and when you do, use the promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus straight to your account. From this tight basketball race to the end of the football season and beyond, even your favorite Vegas casino games, don't forget, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available throughout 2022 over at BetOnline, the fastest and the easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Presuming that as I speak, the Warriors can close out a win over the Cleveland Cavaliers, they will take back a tie for the number one seed in the Western Conference, which, of course, don't forget, if they were to tie, would get the number one seed because they own the tiebreaker over the Suns. That's what we are looking at. The Jazz just below that, 28-12. The Grizzlies, a hair bolt behind them, 27-14. And then a little bit of a logjam behind that. Mavericks, Lakers, Nuggets, sort of just above 500 or right around 500. So it's a three-team race. Maybe the Grizzlies have something to say. I'm not a super believer in that. I think that the Jazz are just a bit behind the Suns and the Jazz. Oh my gosh, the Suns and the Warriors. I'm looking at too many team names, but here's the bottom line, and here's what I came to say today. Remaining strength of schedule is something I have not talked about, and it reinforces my whole thing here in terms of the Jazz having a uphill battle to fight. So not only do the Jazz have 42 games left, the Warriors have 44 games left, and the Suns have 43 games left. So the Jazz have played a little bit more of their schedule and still did not use that to their advantage to climb up the standings with wins. They also have by far the most difficult remaining strength of schedule. So if we're looking again at who might finish with the top seed in the Western Conference and own home court advantage in the Western Conference Finals, if they get there, the Jazz face a pretty difficult situation. They also play the Suns four more times, so don't forget that. They play the Suns four more times and the Warriors three more times. So they have to directly face the competition there. And it's the sixth overall most difficult strength of schedule, probably in large part because they have to play the Warriors and Suns so much the rest of the way. You scroll down a little bit, the Warriors have... So the Jazz were at 51%. Their remaining opponents have a combined 51% winning percentage. The Warriors are at 49.8%. They play the Suns just one more time. That's all the way in March. And then, of course, the Jazz three more times, like I just said. Then a little bit behind them at 48.8%. So basically a full percentage point behind and 2.5 percentage points behind the Jazz are the Suns, who have a, again, 48.8% winning percentage left for their teammate, for their opponents. And that is bottom six. That is the sixth best, I guess, if you want to win, the sixth best winning percentage in terms of it being low, the sixth worst opponents, basically, going forward combined for the Suns. And so, look, the Suns have an inside track. They've battled through their Omicron wave. They've battled through DeAndre Ayton's injury and a lot of their bench pieces being out between Kaminsky and Nader, and having to give Ish Wainwright and Elfrid Payton and Jalen Smith minutes and signing Bismack Biyombo. Like, this is not a season anymore where the Suns are going to be taken, you know, for granted because they didn't deal with injuries or they didn't deal with any adversity like people said last year. That's not really the truth anymore. And yet they still are tied at number one, and they have this inside track to the number one seed here from a schedule perspective. So they are in very good position. We are also 2 weeks now away, basically, from a doubleheader that the Suns are going to have against the Jazz. So that is, let's see, tomorrow's the 10th. So it's the 24th, Monday the 24th at home, and then Wednesday the 26th on the road, which is a nationally televised game that night, will be two against Utah. And those will be really, really fascinating. These teams tend to bring the best out of each other. They often play very close games. And it'll be the first time we get to see them match up, so it'll be fun to do it twice in a row. Both teams are healthy right now, so let's hope it stays that way and we can get a really good impression of how this is going to look. I continue to think that the Warriors proved themselves to be just a little bit better than the Suns. I stand by that. I think that defense is such a difficult nut to crack, and I think they have enough of an institutional system on offense combined with Curry's brilliance that they're going to be able to get the job done. And I think they just have a little bit more than the Suns all around, and with Curry's, you know, and he's clearly the best player on the floor when these two teams clash. I think the Suns are better than the Jazz. I think they've proven that over the past, they proved that last season, and their ability to get further into the playoffs, I think, reinforced it. I don't necessarily have much to worry about against the Jazz, but I am just interested to see it because I think their offense still is. It's the best in the NBA. It probably will be the best in the NBA all season long. It's pretty clearly a step ahead of the competition. And this is what I ended up actually tweeting the other day, just looking at it from a broad perspective. It's very fascinating when you zoom out because, as I said multiple times now, the Warriors' defense is historically good relative to the rest of the league. Like, they are head and shoulders above the rest of the competition. The Jazz are actually pretty similar offensively. They are number one by a wide margin on offense. Their offense is a handful to deal with, and they have just so many wrinkles within that. Besides just Donovan Mitchell's individual ability, they have the, you know, relentless pick and roll attack with Rudy Gobert as a role man and shooters everywhere. And then they have, you know, Mike Conley, like, as a third sort of part of their offense. They have Bogdan Bogdanovic, or Bojan Bogdanovic, as a, you know, an ISO weapon and a shooter himself. So that is difficult in its own right. And then you combine the two, and the Suns are just this sort of balance of both. And maybe you're listening and you feel like that's exactly the way to go, and I wouldn't blame you. I mean, it took the Suns a long way last year. They were very adjustable. They were very malleable in terms of who they were facing and what type of game they had to play. They could win a game three on the road against the Clippers with DeAndre Ayton, you know, rebounding the living hell out of the ball and getting it done dirty. Then they could go and, you know, face the Nuggets and score, you know, 120 points if that's what it took, because the Nuggets defense wasn't going to stop them. And so maybe the balance is what you want, but either way, it is just such a cool race because it's one side all defense, not all defense, one side a great defense, one side a great offense, and then the Suns are right there in the middle, and we'll see who rises to the top. And there's plenty of games left between all these teams to decide it sort of once and for all, including four between Utah and Phoenix, which is going to be probably the main events of the rest of the year. There's only one of those Warriors games left, so Lots to keep track of, lots to think about, and of course some roster changes coming along the way, I'm sure. So, not to say we know everything we need to know about that Western Conference race, but it is heating up, and it is getting to the point already where you cannot expect to lose games to the Heat on a random Saturday, or drop a game here and there, or, you know, have Klay Thompson getting reintegrated and drop a game because of that, and you know, have it not burn you. It's going to burn you. And so it'll just be a matter of limiting that mistake and winning the games head-to-head when you need to. It'll be fun to watch the rest of the way. We have one more off day before a Toronto clash for the Suns on Tuesday night. So we'll see what the NBA gives us. Maybe I can cook up a guest along the way. Until then, guys, enjoy the start to your week. Happy Monday, and I will talk to you tomorrow.